Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Welcome to another Yale Journal for International Affairs podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Tucholsky. Today, we'll be talking about disaster response in the wakes of hurricanes Irma and Harvey. Our guest today is Rita Shara, who has worked with the UN Development Program for Disaster Response in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. We'll talk about the impact of the hurricanes in those countries, as well as draw out some best practices for disaster response that Rita brings from her experience there. Hello, Rita, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation.
So when we, in the last several weeks, we've been hearing about this, these two huge hurricanes that have rocked the coasts of Houston and also in Florida. We hear about the immediate results of these hurricanes, but what happens after that? In your experience, what is the day-to-day reality like working in disaster response?
Yeah, the first thing that we try to do when we work in disaster is working with governments. And for us, it's like preparedness is very important because I really think that disaster and the response of the disaster is the results of development gaps we were not able to fill in times. This means that when we don't have policies for housing to build with the anti-seismic or anti-hurricane modalities, then we have more victims. When we have done, like United Nations has pushed for a reform in order to give a better response to the different disasters, and we have like a protocol and we follow the protocol. This means that there are disasters that you can foresee, there are disasters that you cannot foresee. In the case of a hurricane, you try to work with the governments in order to prepare. Early warning systems are very important to saving life, but also like in the case of UNDP and experience we had last year with the Hurricane Matthew, it was that we were doing multi-risk maps. This means that with the different mayors of the different municipalities, we study the territory and we know when there are green zones, when it's okay. There are yellow zone, where it's like a mild risk, and then when there are red zones. When the hurricane was coming, the mayor was evacuated people in the green zone. So in this area, we had zero victims. And this is very important, because working on preparedness, according to our studies, means that $1 invested in preparedness is equal to $5 invested in emergency response. So preparedness is the base. And when we know that the disaster is coming, we are side to side with the governments in order to apply the reform. This means that we are divided in clusters and each agencies with different ministers are taking care of one part of the response. Water and sanitation, food, early recovery in the case of UNDP.
So what's happening now in your expert experience after these hurricanes have passed through the Caribbean and the eastern coast of Mexico and the southern parts of the United States? What can we imagine might be happening in these days following the hurricane?
Generally, when there is an hurricane, you can imagine mountains of debris. This means that depending on the strength of the hurricane, you can imagine a lot of trees fallen, a lot of mud. And the first thing you have to do, depending also on the capacity of the country, it's not the same that the United Nations works in a middle-income country than in a low-income country. What you generally do and what we do as UNDP, we inject immediately, especially if the country is a poor country like Haiti, we inject immediately money to the community in order to give cash to start to restart their life immediately. This means that with the community, we start to clean the roads. So we start to clean the roads, we create short-term jobs. But for us, and this is very important, for UNDP since the very beginning when we work on these actions, we try from the very beginning to think about the long term. This means that already when you're giving the answer during the emergency, you have to think about development. How do you do this? I give you the example after Haiti and the earthquake. When we were doing the rubble removal, we were talking with the Ministry of Public Works in order to have a national policy on debris removal. Because thanks to the national policy, if another earthquake would have arrived, the country would have been more prepared. So if you do this kind of initiatives already during the emergency, you are starting to build this bridge toward developments. And this is very important to make country and people more resilient.
You keep talking about preparedness. What are some of the critical steps that you asked the Ministry of Public Works to take following the earthquake in 2010 to prepare for any future disasters?
It's not only the Ministry of Public Works, but it was also the Ministry of Defense. Generally, what we do is an assessment of the capacity of the government to see how we can strengthen in the capacity of the people that are working, for instance, for the civil defense. Volunteers are very important because these are the ones that can help you. And create a system of communication and information. This is the base. When you are in a country and there is a disaster, you need to know immediately to give a proper response how many victims, where these victims are, how we can georeferentiate the points and give an answer. So we try to reinforce and to strengthen the capacity of the government, of the staff, of the people that works in the different ministries, but also the volunteers, to create a system, the disabled, and it's stronger to give an answer, a response, to the disaster when it happens.
And how does this kind of emergency preparation and emergency response differ in countries like Haiti, like the Dominican Republic, not only because they are lower income countries than the United States, but also because they're islands?
Yeah. Where you are on islands and like islands in the Caribbean, but also in the Pacific, you are working with a high level of vulnerability. I mean, what is happening with Irma and Jose and the previous hurricane is something that we are seeing more and more because climate change, and this is something we have to think about. Irma was the strongest hurricane ever registered in the history of the Caribbean. Of course, when you work in an island, you have the risk is higher. Mm-hmm. You have more vulnerability. You have to be more prepared. Because as soon as you are recovered from an hurricane, another one can happen. And there are a lot of these, and there are a lot of problems linked to the environment, like the sands, the kilometers of beach that are being reduced. So the challenges from the environmental point of view, respect to a country that is attached to the continents, are higher for peninsular states. And this is something we should take into consideration also, because I remember when we had two tropical storms 10 years ago in Dominican Republic, Olga and Noel, it took us 10 years to recover the same meters of sands in the different beach of the northern part of the country. 10 years.
And why does this, the meters of sand on the beach, matter?
It matters because all the microorganisms that are attached to it, like the reef, the fishes, like each time that an hurricane, it's an island, all the fishes around, all the ecosystem is totally destroyed. This means that it takes like many years to restore all the system that is around an island. And like everybody has a special role. Like the reef are very important because the hurricane can reduce the speed before arriving to the lands. So when everything is destroyed, the vulnerability of an island is going to raise. So if we're going to have more and more hurricanes, this means that we are going to be more and more vulnerable, and we don't have the sufficient time to recover the ecosystem from one hurricane, and another one is already coming.
So thinking about these challenges on an ongoing basis, we're thinking about human suffering, rebuilding communities, providing basic needs like food and water, transportation, ecosystem. What is the single greatest challenge, or how should we be thinking about these challenges in prioritization, one from the other?
First challenge is having strengthened institution that can give a response. So working with them from the beginning to try to have better policies to prevent victims is very important. When the disaster occurs, coordination is fundamental, because if we are able to coordinate all these stakeholders, this means that we're going to give a more effective response to the victims and to the population. And then I'm a strong believer in the fact that we have always, always involved the population from the very beginning. Even if you work in preparedness, people need to know where the risks are. But also when we're giving the response, If the people participate, there is a huge sense of ownership and awareness towards the disaster. So I really think that these are the challenges we should face and think in order to build back better.
You came from an international organization, from the United Nations. How was that role? How did you find that role in relationship to the government? What was your role? What role did the government take and what role did the population take?
Yeah. I can give you the example of Haiti and United Nations is always in a country to support the government. So the governments take the lead and we are there with specific protocols and action to support the government and the decision of the government. After the earthquake, there was a massive fundraising done for Haiti, and there were different organizations that were collecting to create the Haitian Reconstruction Fund. And then in decision with the government, we started to prioritize and see which were the main challenges. So I was working for UNDP at the time, and we started with a project of to remove and recycle the debris. Mm-hmm. With this debris, we were producing pavestones that were able to rebuild the different neighborhoods, creating jobs at the same time, with a very important participation of women in this. Then, at the same time, we were closing the camps in order to allow to the people to go back to the neighborhoods of origins. And by doing this, we were talking with the community leaders in order to have a community platform and with them, thanks also on the base of multi-risk maps, see and decide how the neighborhoods would be reconstructed. So this was an integrated approach. It's an approach that we call from debris to development, because allowed us to support the government in one of the main challenges that were debris and closing the camps to create this path to development. I started as a project coordinator, project manager of one of the biggest debris removal project, and I ended up as a head of the poverty reduction unit in Haiti, managing 12 projects that were all connected to bridge emergency with development.
In this case, in the last 3 weeks, we've seen Harvey, Irma, Jose, Katia, and a huge earthquake off the coast of Mexico. How do you anticipate that UNDP, other international organizations, and the international community may respond to all of these disasters simultaneously?
The statistics says that we are going to have more and more disaster and less money. Climate change is challenging us. And at the same time, we have other huge problems like migration. Mm-hmm. So, if we look at the world, we are seeing that there are very extreme challenges and we should be able to respond. Now, I think that public policies are very important in order to prevent. Like Mexico, they had a huge earthquake. 8.1 was the same scale of Haiti. And they had, thanks God, 80 victims. Mm-hmm. This means that we are learning. We are learning, we are drafting policies, we know how to build better, we know that we need policies for housing, that we know that we need multi-risk analysis. But we should admit that this is a fact. The climate change is bringing more and more natural disaster. And since we know that $1 in preparedness is equal to $5 in response, we really should all together, donors, government, United Nations, work seriously on preparedness.
I want to talk about that for a little bit. So a lot of people in Miami were saying, oh, I've been through hurricanes before. I know how this goes. Maybe I won't leave my house during Irma. Maybe I'll stay. And we also know that Irma was one of the strongest hurricanes on record. At the same time, though, with more and more hurricanes in the Atlantic, it seems like there might be new areas that are going to be vulnerable to these kinds of disasters. Could you speak for a moment about those new areas and what they should do in order to be prepared for the first hurricane they might experience?
Yeah. Well, more and more we're starting to talk about climate change refugees. like many people think that many islands of the Pacific, like tiny islands in the Caribbean, are going to disappear for this. And this is, means that we are going to have a huge impact on urbanization, how we're going to build this new area. But also we should have a high awareness of that this is happening. I think that the agreement on climate change, the fact that all the countries of the world, except Nicaragua, agreed on this. This was a huge step of dialogue, of admitting that this is going on. And there are many studies, technology, innovation, new way of thinking, renewable energy. There are a lot of think tanks that are working about this in order to understand first how we can mitigate, which action of mitigation we can take towards climate change, how we can improve the way we build houses, we build cities, we create new areas that can be safer. And I think that's innovation and technology are going to have a central role in this, and also a lot of creativity in order to have safer cities, because this is happening, it's happening now. And like the three hurricanes in the Caribbean told us that we don't have time. We need to search for answer today.
I totally agree. So what are some of you, you're the expert in this. You have worked on this for a number of years. What are some of the things that that communities who haven't experienced a ton of hurricanes in the past, what can they do now? What are some concrete action steps that they can take?
I can give you an example. Like if you live on the coast, mangroves are very important because mangroves, like reefs, they can reduce the speed of the hurricane and reduce the impact that you're going to have in the land. So for instance, when we work about community and the kind of jobs we can do with them, like mangrove crops are one of the projects we do. Or like multi-risk maps are very important. When we work with community and we know that there are green area, orange area, where through mitigation work we can support a wall by retaining it. Mm-hmm. We know that when an hurricane is coming, the wall will resist and the houses will not collapse. Urbanization, avoid that the people, the most vulnerable ones, are going to put the houses very close to a river, will save life once the river is going to be full of water because heavy rains. So planning is very important. Involve the community and let them to be aware of the risk is very important. Early warning system, as on this, partnership with private sector is very important. The fact that we can collaborate with communication companies to send SMS to fishermen to say, in 3 days an hurricane is coming, please take your boats, please go home, this can save life. So, there are concrete actions that we can do. And I can give you another example, the fact that we create with the Ministry of Interior maps or georeferenced system that can allow us to see where and how the hurricane created some damages. This help the entire community, the stakeholder, to give a more effective response. So from the environmental point of view, from the economic inclusion, the preparedness, the capacity of the people in governments, there are very concrete actions that we can do.
What you're talking about with the early warning systems with the private sector companies is amazing. We know this, that these kinds of simple solutions can save thousands or millions of lives, depending on the scope of the disaster. What other actions have the private sector taken in the work that you've done in the past?
Telephones is unbelievable because, for instance, through the telephone, we can know the GPS point where a victim is. So, there have been many initiatives for drones, for instance, no? Talking about innovation and there are experiments where the drones can capture the heat of the body when you are under the rubble. And thanks to this, they can find the victims that are after an earthquake, for instance. So the private sector, the innovation, telecommunication companies can be really helpful. But also like Google Maps, the fact that we can have access to satellite immediately, the fact that this is very important to give effective response after a disaster. And technology is going very fast, and innovation is going very fast. I'm so great. I'm not an engineer, but I'm so grateful to all those that through maps, through technology, can give us an immediate idea of where the damages are, where the victim are, in order to let us to go in and give a proper response.
You said something about the potential role of drones in the future, and it sparked an idea with me that my friend mentioned that a lot of his friends that are Marines or first responders were staying in Florida to be those first responders in the wake of Hurricane Irma. Do you think that there is potentially a rescue role for kind of unmanned or vehicles with less risk to human life in the future?
This experiment of drones with the temperature of the body really impressed me. Really impressed me because it's an unbelievable tool. I think that innovation is going very fast. And I'm not an expert in this, but I would not be surprised if in 10 years we can find drones that are able to, I don't know, with some machine on the earth capable of remove faster the debris to take the body. I will not be surprised because like from the military world, there are innovation that are coming out. And I'm sure that when a disaster occurs, these, as it has been in the past, are going to be put at the disposal of the population in needs.
How has disaster response and information sharing between governments changed over the last 10 to 15 years? I heard also that especially small governments with small information gathering capacity, with few satellites, in the past had a really, really hard time identifying threats and identifying when the hurricanes were coming and where they might hit. But with satellite imagery that's shared across governments now and multinational media conglomerates being able to publish satellite imagery very early, how has that changed the way that people can respond?
A lot, because now we have a level of information which is very detailed. You can see the path of the hurricane. You can see the different forecasts. You can prepare much better. But not only to foresee an hurricane, it's unbelievable how, thanks to maps and satellite image, even if you are not in the country, you can see the damages, understand what kind of response you need, even if you are very far from the country. And also, thanks to maps, it's unbelievable how you can go into the details of the damage. Like if you zoom in, you can arrive to see the roofs, how many roofs are not there anymore, how you can do estimation about the kind of trees. So from the very beginning, in like to foresee the hurricane until the day after, thanks to technology and a sharing of satellite images and maps, you can have a real information on how things are going on. And this is fundamental. And of course, this gives a lot of information. Information is power. And this allows us to be better prepared and to give better response.
That seems amazing to me. I'm thinking about being someone in Geneva or in New York and trying to understand the scope of a disaster and literally having an image of what's going on the ground. It seems like that would make such a huge difference from the coordinator's perspective. That's really,
absolutely,
really incredible.
Absolutely, and more. I remember the day after I met you 1 year ago, thanks to the satellite image, we were able to see the day after and the following day, just because of two pictures, and it was very clear about the roof, about the trees, about the damages that we had in the crops. This was unbelievable, and this was done in 24 hours.
That's amazing. How does this kind of information that you can see from far away, like in New York or in Geneva or wherever else outside of the disaster zone, how does that information get disseminated to people on the ground before the hurricane in communities where there isn't great information access, and then after where, because of hurricanes or earthquakes, there's enough damage that some of those infrastructures have been changed?
Well, first of all, we have an early warning system with the government. Then once you have the damages, you start to fundraising, and you need to write projects in order to get these funds. And the fact that this image, that this information can arrive so early to New York, Geneva, it's a huge support for fundraising to convince the donor that, yes, this country needs help. it's fundamental. Yeah, there is a visual part. It's not data. You can see it. You can see that there is no roof for 100 houses. And it's very clear in the image. You can see that all the trees fallen down. So it's very clear. And of course, when you see something, it's much more powerful than when you read something. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have to take a decision in, 3 hours.
Absolutely. How does that information, for example, the information of the scope of the damage, get back to communities in Haiti? For example, let's say the power grid and the cell structure has been completely damaged and there is no way for a company to send an SMS to those people and say, your community was badly hit. This is the scope of what's happening. Who disseminates that information to those individuals in those communities?
Many times it's the way around. Community have an unbelievable capacity to communicate. I mean, since the very first time when the human beings started to communicate, they found a way and community find a way. So Jenny is the way around. We go to do evaluation mission, it's the community who inform us. Mm-hmm. So what do we do is that we go on the field to get and gather information and to create a situation report, no? So it's really the way around. The community inform us about the damages. And of course, like municipalities are very important, but then we have other stakeholders like churches, like we have the Ministry of Interior that have regional departments around, but the community is one of the best way to get information because they are the ones who pay the higher price when a disaster occurs. So they have needs and they communicate to us in order to see how we can answer to these needs immediately.
I want to take a step back for a second. We've been talking in general about disaster response as a singular concept, but we're really talking about two distinct kinds of disasters, hurricanes and earthquakes. They're fundamentally different in a lot of ways. What are some of the key differences in the way response efforts happen after these kinds of disasters?
Well, the first difference for sure is that hurricane, you can foresee, earthquake, it happens. And when it happens, you can see that you live in an area where there is a high seismic risk. I mean, Italy, I am from Italy. Italy has been living for the last 2 years a terrible situation. We know that almost 80% of Italy live in a high-risk zone, but, I mean, we cannot do anything about this, and nobody could foresee that the first earthquake in Amatrice would have triggered the thousands of earthquakes that we had. Also because from when you listen to geologists, for them 10 years and 300 years is the same. They can tell you another earthquake is coming, but for them 10 years and 300 years is the same because we are talking about geological era. I mean, it's a huge lapse of time. Hurricane you can foresee. You can foresee, you can prepare, because when you see the path, you can work. You have enough time to work with, the government. There's enough time to work with international organization, with the community, private sector, as the time communication company, have the time to send SMS, we can prepare. With the earthquake, we can prepare, yes, through public policies in order to reduce the risk. So avoid to give license in red zones. Oblige the citizen to build houses with anti-seismic rule. This is very important, but this gets time.
And once the disaster has happened, once we know the scope of the damage, what is difference in the response efforts?
The nature of debris is different. For instance, a typhoon or an hurricane can give you trees, can give you plants, can give you roof, but an earthquake like the one in Haiti can give you 10 million cubic meter of the debris, of rubbles, of bricks. And if you ask me how much is it, 10 million cubic meter is a line from Canada to Argentina. That's what we calculated. If we would put all the rubbles of Haiti in a truck of 14 cubic meters, This would be a line from Canada to La Terra del Fuego. With 200,000 deaths, this was a massive disaster. It's not the same way you have... and also the consequences. I mean, you have rubbles in the earthquake, you have to rebuild a city, you have trees with an hurricane, you have an ecological disaster. So, I mean, the consequences are very different and the kind of response is different, even if the protocol is the same. We were able to recycle debris after the earthquake by making pavistons. We were able to recycle trees to make boats for the fishermen to create livelihoods. So there is a basic concept of how we recover community and we go from a disaster to the emergency to development, but then the kind of action is different, the consequences and the damage to the environment or to the urbanization is different if we have an earthquake or we have an hurricane.
So looking forward, you've mentioned kind of like climate change and preparedness and the idea that these disasters are going to happen more and more frequently. What is the worst case scenario for countries like Haiti, like the Dominican Republic, that are often in the path of these kinds of natural disasters?
The worst case scenario is that we are not taking or drafting the good policies to repair the damages, that we are not taking climate change in consideration, that we are not protecting the coast, the community is not very well prepared. I mean, we insist a lot on the fact that the disaster is not natural. What makes a disaster natural is that the decision makers are taken. Because you can prevent this. After Haiti, there was Chile. There were barely no victims because in Chile, they knew how to build back better. So what you have to do, it's having a set of policies, of instruments, of tools that can allow to this population to be safer.
What are your final thoughts, your most important message to people who might be involved in disaster response in the future or might be affected?
The climate change exists. It's not a problem of the Caribbean or Pacific. It's a problem of everybody because resources in this world are limited. If somebody is over-consuming in one place of the earth, it has an impact on most vulnerable people in another place of the earth. And everybody is responsible. And this is something we have to act now. So this is a typical problem where by acting locally, we can support globally other people. To politicians, policies are very important, and it's very important to involve in this decision-making and policies the community in order to have stronger community able to respond, a stronger institution able to respond. And the final thing is that financial resources are going to be less and less because disasters are going to be more and more, and we have to really act now in order to avoid victims in the future.
So I want to ask one more question. What can we do as individuals? We think about our actions sometimes as discrete. You know, I flew on a plane to such place, or I eat red meat, or I purchase, you know, things in a plastic cup and then I throw it away. And we know that we could reduce each of these actions individually. But what are some other things that we can do living in Connecticut or living far, far away from where the most vulnerable areas are for earthquakes or for hurricanes? What can we do now to support preparedness in the future in these other places?
This is the typical situation where every action counts. Every citizen of US consume every day 300 liters of water. Somebody in Africa consume 15 liters of water. This is a typical case where we have the same resources and we have to share it. I think that awareness, starting from the shower, the plastic cups, don't throw unnecessary waste in the toilet, switch off the light. We are in a situation where everything is needed, everything counts, and everything sums up. And I'm sure that as we have done in the past with the cars, we're going to arrive in a moment when play can fly, when they yes and when they no. Because the emissions are rising so much that at a certain point we have to stop.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. I would like to add for the students of Yale, since I am a war fellow, I think that you have a great opportunity to be in one of the most important universities of the world, to have idea, put this idea on action, and to really take part of the change. I think that if somebody had the luxury and to be lucky enough to access to this kind of education and instruction, you really need to share this with other people that are less lucky and they really need new ideas to give a better answer to all the challenges that we have in the world.
Rita, we are so happy to count you among the Jackson community and welcome again to the World Fellows Program. We're so lucky to have you here with us.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but thank you so much to Rita Sharra for joining us. Also, thank you to Jack Lawrence for our theme music and Ryan McAvoy for producing this podcast. In the coming weeks, we'll be working on a podcast mini-series about civil-military relations in the United States. I'll co-host the podcast with Army Major William Wright. Together with special guests, we'll explore various aspects of U.S. military from hierarchy and decision-making to counterterrorism and public opinion. We hope you'll join us. As always, keep an eye out for those podcasts by subscribing to us on iTunes. Visit our website at yalejournal.org and follow Wyjah on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening. Until next time. Bye-bye.